Hello, this is Real History. I am Melissa, and today is December the 11th, 2025. And I am talking today with Christine, and I'm really excited about this. We've spoken before, we've done some emails, and I just have to say I love the background. She inspires me. I don't know if it's going to be like hanging some drapes, but look at this, the pattern behind her and all the color and her skirt and we'll get into this a little bit later, but I'll explain it by way of saying that she's an artist. She is a wife, a mother of three children, and they're pretty young. I think she told me they range between the ages of 7 and 2, but I might have gotten it wrong.
Oh, you're
Nine,
close. Good. It was
eight and
one and
two,
nine.
1 and 9.
Yeah.
Okay. I narrowed it down there. Seven and two, 1 and 9. That's really something. So let's dive in. First of all, I want to tell you that Christine has set up her phone and she's recording into the phone right now because of the tragedy that she just discovered probably this morning. And if you want to tell us, I got a message from her saying, I may have to do this on my phone. Something is wrong with my computer. It's acting up. So tell us what happened.
Sure. My children like to take and hide food for some reason. Like I don't feed them. So I constantly find strange food in the weirdest places. So I didn't check my computer for a couple days and found congealed peach juice all over the charging port, the keys, the screen. Nobody fessed up to it. Nobody knows who did it. But yeah, my computer is fried. Yeah. Discovered that yesterday when I messaged you. But I was like, oh, the timing.
Well, anyway. So tell us, well, tell me and everybody else anything that you want to tell us. If you want to start in with how you found Alan, but your whole story, your background, it's all quite interesting. I've got some questions, but I want to give you time to just say who you are.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Well, my name's Christine. I'm 41. Lived in Illinois my whole life. I've traveled outside of it, but this is mainly where I live. I've got a big old Polish German family, so my relations are all over and quite extensive. So family has always been important. We're pretty traditional. I'm on the tail end of a lot of siblings. I'm Jan Brady, if that makes sense. And so my parents were always very traditional, and I obviously was born in the 80s, but I grew up in the 90s, and my house was like the old school house, you know what I mean? I was held to kind of like rules that other people weren't. But at the same time, my parents kind of let I'd go out and party a little bit, but I had to be home by 12. And there were certain ground rules where they still were keeping an eye on you, but weren't so hard on you that when I went to college, I was fine in college. I went to class. I didn't become a drunk. I didn't sleep around because I kind of had that freedom, but also trust while I was growing up. And so I kind of, high school, college, I kind of rebelled against my parents because I was always the oddball. I am the Jan Brady, the weird one. I'm artsy, so I'm strange. I'd question things all the time, say the things nobody wants to hear, want to talk about things nobody wants to talk about. So that's kind of been my whole life. I took Latin in high school. College, I studied art history, and I did a double major. So I was a painting major, but then I was also education, art education, so I could find a steady job outside of college. And I just kind of, I've always been a strange one. I call myself Pluto because I have a lot of friends and all these things, but I'm always on the peripheral. And sometimes I'm considered one of the planets, but a lot of times I'm not. But I'm always there. You know what I mean? So never felt like part of a group really. But I love people and I communicate well with people. So I've always felt like an outsider and never into social media or anything. So I mean, I didn't get Facebook till like, oh gosh, what, 2019 maybe? And it was only because of my art business, trying to build that up. And then the rabbit hole started from there. I mean, all the things. And I randomly found, so then I found Telegram, and that was during all the weird Operation C ordeal. And so then I got on Telegram, and there was a weird clip on some, because I was on some weird groups trying to figure things out. And somebody had posted one of Alan's clips, and I was like, who is this guy? Like, this is exactly what I've been talking about my whole life, and everybody thinks I'm nuts. You know what I mean? And trying to put these pieces together. So trying to search for him, I'd keep coming up with Alan Watts, and I'd be like, they kind of look alike, but I don't think this is the guy. And like, so it took some digging till I finally found you with the real histories. And I was like, and then I brought it back and figured it out. So I think the first time I heard him was probably about 2020. And then, yeah, it wasn't till later on until I finally got a hold of who he was and then found out he had passed and everything. But you had one, I think it was over summer when we were doing a live chat on Telegram. And that's when I said, like, finding Alan and you was just kind of like, oh, where have you been my whole life? Because college, especially with my artwork, was a real struggle because people thought I was nuts. And I'm just kind of like,
Well, let's start there,
okay, I don't know.
because yeah, no. I just think it's you've opened up the door to something very interesting. You've said that you come from a conservative background, a large family. Your family is Catholic.
Yeah, yes. Oh, yeah. And I'm talking about the traditional Latin mass Catholic, yes.
Okay, so you also. Well, we'll get to the husband and the marriage and all of that and the children a little bit later, but let's start with your really feeling outside with your, especially female peers, but probably the males too, because there was a lot of promiscuity, a lot of sleeping around, a lot of objectification of the female form. A lot of the identity of, who you are as a woman is based on what you look like and who wants to sleep with you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you develop a kind of attitude about that.
That I'm not shy to say anything to anybody about. So that's where I would kind of run into, that girl's crazy.
Well, I think what you've hit on, which is not typical for people of your generation, and even including people who've been raised in a kind of religious traditional background, is the idea of just how corrosive sleeping around is on one's psyche.
Oh yeah. And especially, I mean, yeah, I saw the fallout since like high school because I would say, I don't know if you want me to start blabbing now. And if
Yes,
you want me to stop,
blab away.
you just put your hand up or be like
No, blab away.
So yeah, I mean, I grew up in the 90s, and I think that especially, the Baywatch, Girls Next Door era, all that. I have three older brothers, so I was kind of a tomboy, a little rough and tumble, and I kind of had a mouth, and so I was a little more rough because I was kind of raised by my brothers. I had an older sister, but she's much older. So she was kind of out of the house, when I was growing up, because she was away at college. So yeah, so I have that side to me where I growing up and even now I have a lot of male friends because I kind of enjoy that humor and those kinds of things. But I'm also very feminine in terms that I'm emotional, but I'm also very caring and I love people. So I kind of have these two sides to me. And that's where I say I can fit in with a lot of people. But I'm a weird match for a group, if that makes sense. So yeah, with the girls, I would kind of like talk about things that made them uncomfortable, And with the boys, I'd point out things that made them uncomfortable. It's just, I don't even know where to go with it. How do I? So let's say growing up with the Playboy influence and all that. And of course, I think anybody, especially when you're young, you're attracted to beautiful women or whatever. Like, I want to be that girl, the one like the Scarlett O'Hara, when she walks in with the red dress, like the stunning one. Everybody is into that. But I think as I was growing up and starting to see, like, for example, Baywatch, that all the women are very thin and tan and all these things. And then it wasn't till Pamela Anderson came in with these, I mean, garishly ridiculous things that were supposed to look like breasts. And that kind of catapulted that whole genre for a long time. And then, like I said, Playboy, the girls next door. I mean, again, those, I mean, they're just ridiculous. I mean, breasts don't even sit like that. And then he's like having sex with twin sisters and all these things where I'm like, okay, so we have like mutilation of these beautiful teenage girls, right, to their bodies. Two sisters who are having sex with an elderly man, and this is like a good thing. And then he's got 20 girlfriends. And so in a way I tried to play into it because I when I was 15, I got a Playboy bunny t-shirt. Just had the bunny on it, you know, trying to fit in and trying to think those things are normal and just being like the whole time in my head, like, what am I doing? Like, why? Like, what is this? What is this? You know, friends starting to sleep around, and you know, teenage girls being put on birth control, having sex with boyfriends. I had a couple friends by the time high school was done that had children or had dropped out and all these things. And I'd just be like, what? It didn't make sense to me. One of the big movies on MTV at the time was called Porn and Chicken. And that's about these people that deliver pornography and chicken to people's houses. And the other one was called Jailbait, about an underage girl who had a boyfriend in prison. And the whole thing was about sex, you know, and then the real world. So that's that whole era. And I'd just be looking around like, what? This is just like, I mean, gross. I didn't understand what the women were getting out of it. And I also didn't understand why a guy or a male would want to treat any female like that, you know. So I was kind of seeing this abusive, gross, culture growing up. So anyway, so by the time I got to college, that was the Girls Gone Wild era. They actually came to our college. Yeah, Girls Gone Wild came to visit.
Really?
Yeah,
Wow.
Ron Jeremy came. I actually talked to him at a talk. So that's what I was going through, and I would be telling my friends like, "What is this crap? Like, why do all these things so a man can use you?" And I said, "And these people that people will sleep with, you don't know if they just slept with someone 2 hours ago, and did they even shower? You know what I mean? Like just bed hopping." So I'd make art projects about that, and people would think I was either for it and glorifying it, or they would think that I was like this man-hating, angry feminist, whatever you want to call it. And I would just kind of be like, is anybody, nobody disgusted by this? It's very strange, very strange. So, yeah. And then so I started using, because I had a bunch of guy friends in college, they're old magazines, you know, I'd be like, can I use that? And I'd do collages out of them, you know. And then my one friend tried to tell me, I just read it for the articles. So I started reading the articles. I'm like, even the articles are disgusting and the way they talk about women. And it just like kind of terrified me because in a way, it was still abuse and beating someone up. You're just doing it through sex, you know. And that to me made it even more disgusting because like this concept of it being a way to connect with each other, an emotional, physical connection with somebody, but also the way we bring human beings into the world, totally erased to turn it into this strange masturbatory horror show, in my opinion. So that's what I would say.
It's interesting too. You talked about Hugh Hefner with the twins, and I mentioned to you when we were talking a while back that somehow those twins had come up. You know how you're reading a news article and they give you it was a "Where are they now" thing. Well, I didn't even know where they were then. You know what I mean? I'd never heard of Hugh Hefner and these young twins. That was all after my time, if you want to,
Oh,
like,
sure, right.
whatever. I mean, I just didn't know about it. But I was telling you that I mean, they're just a tragedy now. I mean,
Oh, really?
they are a tragedy. It's to think about. When you look at some of these young girls, I mean, especially now, I'm going to go all over the place, but you and I were talking about some of the Disney girls that
It's that
start
same
off.
trajectory.
It is the same trajectory, and the tragedy there is that the parents are generally the ones who are pimping them out.
You said the word. That's it. The pin. Yep.
Yeah,
They
and
know. You know as
they
an
know,
adult.
of course, they do, and I mean, as vile as that statutory rape case with the film director whose name has gone out of my head, but the one who had to flee the states for.
Weinstein? Is it
No, before his time, he was the one who directed Rosemary's Baby and
Polanski?
Polan.
Roman
Thank you.
Polanski.
So Polanski's got this girl over there, and her mother is the one who brought the girl to that environment.
Oh, shocker. Do you
Yeah.
think those are like honeypot situations? You know what I mean? That's what I think the whole Playboy Mansion was. I think they've got all these weird hidden rooms and all
Definitely,
this.
I'm sure that that is an ele a big element of it. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also, I mean, Hugh Hefner was straight up when he came out about what he was doing. You know, he was it was cultural warfare. He didn't
Yeah.
like traditional values and traditional morals. He was waging war on it. So that was a big part of it too.
Well, and someone that says something about the man's character is he read Kinsey and was like, oh, I will promote your work for the rest of my life. The man had infants, you know, given to pedophiles for
Yeah.
24 hours a day doing these things to these children. And I said, what kind of, there's not even a word for what I think of those kind of people. And the fact that that is our pop culture icon. And I mean, Kinsey rewrote sexual law pretty much for what's
Yes.
permissible and okay. And at the same time, all the blue, what was it, the blue code or the blue laws about, you know, indecency, all that was relaxed. And it was all at the same time. What's the so-called comedian, Lenny Bruce? Like,
Oh, yeah.
I love when people are like, oh, he's such a freedom fighter. And it's like he's a piece of like I just the way that those people are like that, he's like the Howard Stern from back in the day. And what that guy did to Dana Plato over the airwaves, I mean, it's just like she ended up committing suicide and then her son did. It's just like these people
I don't
are
know that story. I don't
oh
I don't know
that
this one.
so Dana Plato was from oh God, what's it called with what you talking about, Willis? Oh, what's that show? Not the Facts of Life. It's the same era.
I remember the name from a TV show back
Yes.
in the 80s, but that's
Yes.
all.
With oh my gosh, I can't think of it.
Was
Anyways.
she with Maya Bialik, and that was it that show or a different one?
No, I don't think it's that. It was her, Mr. Drummond's the dad. I have it. I can't think of
Okay,
what it's called.
it's all
Okay,
right.
anyways.
It'll come to you. It'll come to you.
So she was a child star from the 80s. And then she, like, after that, you know, that whole era ends, these child stars, she's trying to find work. Anyway, she started getting into like drugs and softcore pornography films, you know, and all that stuff. So she comes on his show. I don't even know if she's in her 40s yet. She might be in her mid-30s. And all these people call in and just rip on her to the point she starts crying and ends up committing suicide like a couple days later. Yeah, it was a big story. A lot of people blamed him for it. And then her son
Oh,
ended up doing that to himself a couple years later. So just
wow.
kind of like these horrible stories. And then all the different porn stars I've read about and how many of them have committed suicide. I mean, I read Jenna Jameson's book, How to Make Love Like a Porn Star. And if you want to talk about just the most, you see her brain flip-flopping from this isn't okay to this is totally okay. And it's just like the fact that we're giving this to young girls and saying, hey, this is normal. Are we shocked that they're walking around in pretty much thongs now? You know what I mean? Like for sure, it's literally their butt cheeks hanging out. And it's like, it makes sense with all this stuff. If they think that's what men like and men think that's what women want to do, this is what young people are going to do. And I
Yeah.
remember sitting on a train coming back from New Orleans, and this girl had to be maybe 17, 18. She's holding this book and she's got these big fake nails on like this. And what book is she reading? Jenna Jameson's How to Make Love Like a Porn Star. And I was just like, if I had a phone at that time to take a picture, oh my God. I was just like, this is what I'm talking about. It's indoctrination. And
Oh,
it's
yeah. Yeah.
so anyways, what I've seen is fallout from all that now. Is I either have friends that never got married, can't find a stable relationship, or were on birth controls for so long that they can't get pregnant. or the body dysmorphic, the all the injections in the face or the boobs or the whatever. And it's just kind of like, what are we doing? And my question is, what does it tell your children? If
Oh,
your parents, I mean, that's the, I don't think
yeah.
these mothers are thinking about that. And then they're telling their child, love yourself, you're beautiful, be who you are. And it's like,
Yeah. Yeah.
so it was just kind of like, especially being in college, trying to figure those things out on my own, and literally having from every angle, people would just be like, you're crazy, you know? Or even having a lot of professors. I had some professors that were wonderful, don't get me wrong, but some that were just like, eh, it's just the way it is. That's what guys like. It's normal. And it's like, no, it's not.
Yeah, it isn't. And when I got back from Canada, one of my oldest brother took me. I had to get all of my paperwork back in line. I've been away from the country for a long time, and there were things that processes, official things that I had to, take care of. And I had to go to some government building in Dallas, which is the big city. And it was an official government building. And there were people that were just like me that were in line to take care of some kind of paperwork. And there were maybe 25 or 30 of us waiting there. And on the way out of this building, there was a couple that were probably in their early 30s. And the man had was talking to my brother when they were sitting down, and he was saying something that he was doing. It was a business kind of endeavor that had a legitimacy behind it. And he was blah, blah, blah to my brother who was listening to him. Then they got up, and I could see the woman, ostensibly his girlfriend, wife, whatever she was. And this was the first time I'd seen this fashion look. Now, you might have seen it, but I was completely taken aback by it. It was the underboob. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, like, and you're just kind of like,
I couldn't believe it. So what I'm describing here is, so we've been seeing cleavage since the, Renaissance or whatever. There's cleavage, but this look is a top that is cropped to give you the other view, the other angle. And what I thought was, what kind of a man thinks that that is okay on his woman? What kind of a man is proud of that? And they were obviously, I think he may have even said to my brother, my wife, blah, blah. And it's like, so you are sharing the most intimate aspects, you're alluding to this publicly. This is what we do. This is our thing. Letting it all hang out,
Oh yeah, right. Literally.
literally.
I don't I also think that the really dangerous thing, especially thankfully that we can talk about the RAPE word. I don't know if I can say that, but as that people point out, rightfully so, it's not your fault. You know, anybody that that happens to, that should never happen to anyone. But we're making this really dangerous precedence with women to dress like that. And it's not saying you're asking for it because you're naked, but it's like when you know that there's people out there that want to rape people, why would you dress like that? Go out in public like that? Go get drunk like that? You know what I mean? It makes no sense to me. And all it is a setup for failure. Which I think 90% of the things that are promoted to us are. You know, it's just it we're causing all these issues. I mean, Chicago, the stuff that's going on, the violence there, and it's just the constant these idiots that they call mayor. They don't do anything. These people are just in place and given a paycheck to just spew lies. But the violence that's going on, and it's just like, oh no, nothing's happening. Nothing's happening. Look over here, you know, the news speak. It's infuriating is the word. And then the thing is, I know people look at these young women and be like, oh, trash, trash, which we all kind of have that feeling in our heads, but I can attest to the fact of being a 15, 16-year-old girl, yeah, you might be discovering your sexuality, but we're not really sitting there lusting, like, I want to go have sex with that guy, as they're promoting us to be, you know, or teenage girls to be. I mean, I think that's the dangerous part, especially in pornography. I guess supposedly, I wouldn't know, but on the porn sites, the top searches now are like incest. And it's like a stepdad with his stepdaughter, you know. They're starting to break down those barriers. Or you think about the whole Catholic schoolgirl outfit, you know what I mean? This making full-grown men think back to their childhood and lusting for these girls that are like, you know, pubescent. It's so strange. I think of Britney Spears, the song "Hit Me, Baby, One More Time," as she's got, you know, her belly hanging out in this little short schoolgirl skirt saying "Hit me, baby, one more time," and I'm like, what 40-year-old man wrote that song and designed this whole setup, you know, and just making teenage girls or even young girls in dance so sexual they don't even know what they're doing. They don't even know what they're doing. And I think that's the scary part. And the moms and the dads are, you know, let it happen, I guess. But now the scariest part is my generation are now the parents. So
Well, this is what that's what I was just going to say, is that Alan would talk about that all the time, that it's contamination that works generationally. So he's got a story that he's told about showing up in the actually in the in his books about showing up at the door of his girlfriend. He was maybe 15. And he had a girlfriend, and he went to pick her up at the house, and her grandmother came down as the girls come into the door and said, "You're not going out in your slip."
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
And she eventually went and put something else on, but the idea to the grandmother that she would go out dressed like that. And who knows what the mother was thinking, but the other illustration that he'd give is that you've got three generations of women. They're sitting on the couch and they're watching, let's just say, I've never seen 50 Shades of Grey, so I don't know.
Oh.
But let's just say 50 Shades of Grey. And he said that this would be something that both the grandmother and the mother would be horrified and go, "Get that off the television, and I'm not having that in the house." And but now they're all sitting there lapping it up, and there's nobody saying, "This isn't right."
Thank you. I mean, it's the same with that show, Dexter. The guy literally. And granted, these people, I've never watched it. I've read enough of it. I've watched the little excerpts, but I've never watched the full episode. That he's a serial killer that gets his urges out by killing people that deserve to be killed, you know? But it's like also showing him torturing, mutilating people, having sex, you know, gratuitous sex scenes. And yeah, grandmas are watching it with their daughters. And I'm like, what have we co like what have we come to? And yeah, the 50 Shades of Grey thing, my personal opinion on all that stuff, on the kink stuff, is it's for people who can't sexually connect, who can't let their body do what it's supposed to do. They need all these bells and whistles and tools and tricks to even get in a mood. And no, 50 Shades of Grey is nasty. I mean, it's S&M, you know, it's abuse. It's him wanting to tie her up and do nasty, huge things to her. That's just how any woman would find that sexual. I think what it is, and I think it's the same because the big thing now that a lot of women are into are kind of like the fantasy rape, you know, stuff. And I said, that's not fantasy because if that's happening to you, you don't want it to happen. That's the definition of what it is. But now they're sexualizing it. I mean,
You were
oh.
talking about when we were talking a while back, you were mentioning women who who are really into that genre. And it's you called it like Dexter for women. So there's a whole series of books that are about the worst kinds of they might even be women in that position. In other words, the woman is the serial killer and she's also highly sexualized.
That is one of them. And I can't think of, so the author goes by the name of Saint Abby, which if you look at it, it says Stabby. And she was actually killed a couple years ago by her husband because he shot her because she was coming after him with a knife. Yeah. That's the story behind it. So look up Saint Abby. That's the name she goes by. But yeah, so that's a female serial killer. The other thing was over Halloween, everybody doing these AI pictures with like the murderer from Scream with the big knife behind them in the background. And they're like, this, and the AI makes you look all like some teenage little sex object. And then you got the serial killer in the background. And all like a bunch of people I know posting this as their profile pictures. And I'm like, do you know what it is to be stabbed? I don't think you want that. Like, I just, the whole thing is beyond the pale for me. And I think something that really drove it home the other day, this just happened on December 5th, so a couple days ago. The town my brother-in-law lives in, and the town I used to live in, some woman who was heavily on drugs like last year gave birth to a baby in the toilet. They tried to shove it down the toilet with a plunger. And when that didn't work, they left the baby there overnight in the toilet, wrapped it in a bag, put it in a, what is it, like a Busch Light beer box, drove it to the next town over and buried it. So that happened a year ago. Well, on December 5th, somebody reported it and they found the body. So you go to the comments section. And thank you, God. There's some people saying, like, I can't even imagine, like, you can understand or sympathize somebody freaking out a traumatic situation. But what they did thereafter, all the things, it's like, it's un, that's not, you can't, like, try and sympathize with that. That's just selfishness and horridness. And you would not believe the amount of people on there being like, well, don't judge. We only got this much information so far. Blah, 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 blah. And it just, and then the people making jokes about it or talking about the people who killed their baby, like, oh, they're, oh, look at how disgusting they look. Oh, that just the complete loss of what happened to a baby. You know what I mean? And people are so on the, well, this is what happened when abortion's not legal. It's like, we live in Illinois. You can have an abortion while you're giving birth here. You know, they'd probably just even after you had it, you don't want it, they'd get rid of it. And we just passed that medical assistance in dying, you know, that Canada has. They call it MAID. I don't know what they call it here, but Illinois just passed that.
All
And
right.
so we're literally called the abortion, an abortion sanctuary state. Like,
Yeah.
listen, yeah. That country's abortion sanctuary. I was just
Yeah.
like, but you're seeing it in these people's comments, just brazenly in the comment section. And I'm just like, I can't comprehend. Yeah, I don't know, but that's where it's gone. And I think the saddest thing was when I was in college, I got on this kick too. I have so much artwork, that's why I didn't even know what to send you. But I got on this part where I was like, you know how they tell you be careful what you wish for? Well, I'd wish all the time. I'm like, you know what? I wish this would happen to guys. I wish they would get the plastic surgery and they'd see how ridiculous it is. It's like, well, my wish came true. We got the whole transgender thing going on. You know what I mean? It didn't get any better.
And you
And that's when
know,
I go ahead. I'm sorry.
well, I was just going to say your governor there, J.B. Pritzker in Illinois, he's from, I have written about them as not sure. The Pritzker family,
I know
this
you.
is
Yep.
Aspen Institute. His cousin is this weird Jennifer Pritzker. I don't remember Jennifer's name when Jennifer was a man, but or with a, well, a man with, and it would, let's just say an intact man who, Jennifer Pritzker is the one who has heavily funded the transgender ideology being promoted countrywide in universities, not just in Illinois, but in universities all over the country. And Pritzker's sister, or maybe another cousin, they're a huge family, was a cabinet appointee for Obama, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, they're actually, it could be Trump, I don't know, because I don't keep up with politics, but,
It's
and
all the same.
Yeah, and it is all the same. Thanks. Good point. And then there are two other Pritzkers that are high up in the CFR and the Aspen Institute. So we're talking, I mean, it's shocking that J.B. Pritzker pushes through assisted dying. I don't think so. I mean, he was the right man in place at the right time.
Oh yeah, I said that with all these people. I'll get really mad, and then I say they're just like, for him, he's just a fat puppet. Well, I don't
Yeah.
know. He looks like he's on Ozempic now because he looks pretty deflated. So yeah, but yeah, they're puppets. And yeah, Jennifer is the first female billionaire too.
Yeah.
So got that title for him.
And it's I don't know. I try to be specific in the way that I say things. So Jennifer is the first man who has been divested of his manhood billionaire.
There you go. Thank you. Because I truly find it offensive, because I think that's my main point too, is doing all my artwork. People would be like, "Well, you hate men." And I'd be like, "No, actually, I love men very much. I have a wonderful father, wonderful brothers. I've only been surrounded by good men. Are they perfect? No. Everybody, and in our teenage years, when you're a young adult, you do stupid things. You're figuring out who you are." But in the end, my whole point is, like, men and women, we are two pieces that without each other, we won't even exist if we're not together. You
You
know, we
know,
can't.
I've been reading the C.S. Lewis, the third novel in the Ransom Space trilogy, called The Hideous Strength.
I've been listening. Yes.
And just this morning, before I mean, before right now, this morning, I was reading some more in there, and I got to a very interesting passage, because the whole novel really is the male-female dynamic. It's about what a true marriage is. And Jane is coming to the point where she's going to finally have her experience of what it is to submit to God. And this, as it's leading up to that, she's having a series of thoughts about kind of exactly what we're talking about, because really, what is at the root of her problem? She's not frigid, but she deeply resents being objectified. Okay, fair enough. But she's in her marriage, so she hasn't been able to separate out that there is a big difference between having your body loved, adored, and satisfied, pleased, and played with by the man that you love, who is hopefully going to be the father of your children, and being objectified by total strangers.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
It's not even on the same planet of a conversation.
Well, I think it's interesting. You can tell when someone hasn't had a stable, deep relationship, when they're afraid in a relationship that, oh, the sex is going to get boring. Like, if you're in a good relationship, you know what I mean? It doesn't, and it never does, because number one, you're not in this alternate reality of trying to please someone, right? You just are. You exist together. And it's like your hormones and everything, they play off each other. When the time comes together, and it works. You know what I mean? It's not this forced production, I don't know what else to call it, you know, a show. The whole concept of women faking it, I'm like, what? Like, why would anybody ever do that? And the fact that that's like a normalized thing, I'm just kind of like, wait, what? And then you realize, I think most of it is, a lot of women cannot enjoy sex because they are so focused on, what does this look like? What does this look like? What does this look like? And it's like, but sex isn't pornography. You know what I mean? It's not necessarily focusing on one thing. I mean, at points it could be. But it's not like that. You know what I mean? When you're in the moment with somebody, you're engaging together. It's not like you're on a screen. And I think a lot of women can't separate their own body issues or hangups from the act itself. And I think that's where a lot of this show comes from, you know, the discomfort with oneself. And I think too, men have the ones who have watched a lot of pornography and stuff, they think that that's something you should do. That's what feels good. And the women think, well, that's what they're doing. It should feel good. And then it's like, I don't think they ever really learn their own body is what it is. We're so busy imitating, you never actually go it on your own and figure it out. So I don't know. So that's the only thing I can say is thank God I've never struggled with that. And I think that kind of helped me feel grounded is that, I mean, I've been with my husband since we were 17. I went away to different colleges. I went out of state. I did all different things. But being out there made me realize just how lost the majority of people are, and especially people my own age. I never found another man that I was like, oh, all right, like, we connect like that. Didn't happen, And I think that's it. Like, yeah, the if you know yourself and you value people, it's that's a hard thing to find. That's a rare person right there.
No, that's lovely, really, that you've
Well, it
had that,
doesn't mean
and I
it's
could see.
perfect though. There's a lot of
Well,
growing with that. So we've had it, in marriage, you have your ups and your downs, but it's good. I wouldn't trade it for anything else. I wouldn't,
yeah.
you know.
No, I've had this conversation, especially too with people who have been married for a long time, and I've said this, I don't, this may not be everybody's experience, but I have said to people who were going through a rough patch or whatever, I said, look, there are going to be times when you don't even like that person. You don't like, I mean, the idea that you're, oh, you're going to just be in love and it's this romance and it's like, ooh, you're driving me crazy, seriously.
Well, I kind of, and I call it too, like, I find, like romance movies and all that, I call them the female pornography. 'Cause I'm like, what guy do you know that acts like that? You know what I mean? And I think that's the thing. I can appreciate men because I had brothers that I grew up with. You know what I mean? And I said, it's not necessarily, maybe some men are going to buy you the flowers and do all these things like that. Some men will, most won't. I said, if they're coming home to you and they're working for you and providing and all those things, I said, that's how a lot of men show their love. You know what I mean? It's not like necessarily gifts and these things. You know what I mean? Taking you away on trips. Hey, that'd be nice. But I think a lot of people get these rosy colored glasses as to what a relationship is and really lose what the true meaning is, that it's a partnership. And partnership means sometimes I'm up here and you're down here and I got to pull you up and vice versa. That's what it is. It's not like you have to make me happy. You
No,
can't make
that's
anybody
yeah.
anything.
I don't even like, I mean, I'm always kind of annoyed when I hear people, and if you do this in your marriage, sorry, but it annoys me when people say, "Oh, we're going on date night." And it's like, sorry, but I mean, date night is something that people do when they're really young before they get married, and I mean, it's like, what's that about? You're in a marriage, you're in a relationship that is deep and intense, and it's everything. It's not, oh, well, we have to go have a date and reconnect. So it's like, hey, you live in the same house. How,
Well,
why should you need to reconnect? You're
I almost,
connected.
it almost seems like it's a social media thing because I'll find that too, that I'm almost like, oh my gosh, we haven't gone on a date night. Like what? And it's just kind of like, I think there's also, and there's fine lines there because especially when you have young children, I mean, your sleep is so broken and everything is like a ugh. It's really easy to get kind of lost, you know what I mean, and overwhelmed and things. And you do have to take a step back sometimes. And I think that's the importance of your mother or mother-in-law, having the other generation with you to help you navigate those waters. But I noticed too that, I mean, my parents had a huge anniversary that they just celebrated, and all of our family and all these things, my son's first birthday, all these big things happened this year. And I realized I didn't post any of it on my Facebook page. And I was kind of like, oh, wait, why didn't I do that? And I was kind of like, because I was in the moment. You know what I mean? My mind wasn't there. And same with when my husband and I went out. I didn't post pictures of that either. We went out on Halloween. We went as Care Bears. And I didn't post it because we were out having fun. And then the next day I see all these pictures and I'm like, oh. And I just realized that it's just kind of like, I don't know. It's people that post those things is because they need the attention. You know what I mean? Or to let people know, you know, but
Yeah.
why? If it's about you and what you two are doing, why does everybody need to know?
Yeah. You know, I've never had a and well, and I should say too, back to date night, as you were describing the lack of sleep and all of that that goes with having a family, I was actually thinking to myself, oh, well, that's easy to you know, for you to say because you don't have children. So, you know, probably you would have benefited from just saying, "Oh, here, mom, here's the babies. We're gonna go get pizza."
Enjoy. And yeah, and thankfully my mother and mother-in-law are helpful because not everybody has that, you know. But yeah, it's just kind of it's that whole idea though that like you need your family. I mean, and especially having children. I wasn't, so as an artist and because of all the body things and, you know, a man doesn't want you after you have a baby, you know, that whole thing put in my head. I was like, I'm not having kids. I'm going to be an artist and I'm going to go travel around and do shows. And I did, I won like a juried exhibition. I was asked to like reapply for different things. And I just kind of like lost my drive for it. I think because making artwork and all the thing, it's kind of soul sucking or draining because you put like a lot of emotion and thought into it. And if people don't like it, it's just blown off. Or, well, what artists are you into? What who are you following? What galleries do you go to? And it's like, that's not what it is. I'm expressing what I feel in the world around me. And you realize the art world isn't really about artists. It's just a big production company. I almost think that it's honestly just a money laundering scheme, you know, when a rotten banana can sell for millions of dollars. I'm like, what else is going in that crate? You know? I think it's like a racket. And so for me, I'm an artist. So if I want to make stuff, I make things. I don't make it for anybody else. I just kind of am reflecting what I see, I guess. And I don't even know what tangent I went off on and what I started with, but anyways.
Well, there's a couple of things that I'll add to that. I am going to put in some of Christine's images here, some artwork, I should say,
Viewer
images,
discretion is advised.
Viewer discretion is advised. There is an image that I'm including that is called, and I probably won't have the time to caption everything, but
You're fine.
this one is called After School Special. And I do believe that you'll be able to recognize it. So I'm looking at all of the images and I'm thinking, okay, this is good. I can really understand what she's trying to say. And then I got to that one and I'm like, okay, this is rated X and I can't put it up on any channel I for a variety of reasons. So I said that to Christina and I'm like, nobody wants to have their art censored. But she didn't
It's
miss.
okay.
She didn't miss a beat. She said, I don't even want to say the word, but she said, I'm so progressive. I just managed to, she said, I turned that into a torch of freedom.
Looks like a big old doobie. Yeah.
Anyway, it's the point of the artwork is poignant and it's powerful. It really does show the tragedy when young girls have been sexualized. They don't know what's happening and they go along with it because, I mean, you know, what is a 5-year-old doing singing to these Disney girls that have been promoted and all of a sudden it's highly sexualized? I was giving you an example. I don't, Sabrina, what's her like name? Carpenter. I showed you that one that,
Oh, right. Yeah. And I
I
didn't
mean,
even know
it's
about
just,
her.
and I'm not going to include these images, but this is somebody who started out like Miley Cyrus and the whole crew and Britney Spears. They all come up. It's Disney, which is just, it's like a, what do you call it? Like a chicken ranch or something.
Oh, you know
You know,
what?
like,
I replaced the D with a J. Just use your imagination. Yeah, that's what I think it is. It's for creeps. Yeah. Because I said, what full-grown man produces that stuff, directs that stuff? You know what I mean? That's what it is. It's like a pedophile. Ugh.
It is really disgusting, and more needs to be said about it. But I mean, on the other hand, what you're looking at is generational fallout. You're looking
Oh,
at
yeah.
cultural contamination, and what Christine told me in a conversation a while back that was it's heartbreaking, really, is that these friends of hers that are into reading this kind of serial killer sexualized novels, and they think it's perfectly okay, and some of them would call themselves even, I don't know, like normal people or Christians or conservatives or whatever, and they're still taking this in. What you're looking at is people who have no idea that there's something else. I mean, they don't even have a place to get back to.
Yep.
That's how profound the intergenerational contamination is. There's no place to get back to.
Yep. Oh, 100%. And then, I mean, so something that's weird is, like I said, my artwork. So this, a lot of that was done like 2006 to 2009. That big one I sent you of my friend in the headdress, that was 2019. So that was 10 years later. And I mean, I still do stuff now, but not like that. I got some funny ones, but what was my point on that? I don't remember where I was going. I
Well,
don't know.
that's okay. You know, so
Don't
you thought you were going to be an artist. You
worry.
got married. You said, I don't know if I want to have children. You come from this big Catholic family. I don't know that I want to do that. I want to do my art. You got qualified to teach. You were teaching. And then you told me the story about saying, you and your husband saying, well, maybe we will do this, have a child.
Yeah, so
And
I was 30 years old, and I've been married for 3 years, and we had this really cool house, and I worked full time, he worked full time, and he was just kind of like, so are we gonna have kids or not? And I was just kind of like, I don't know, like apprehensive. And again, in the back of my mind was that idea, am I gonna get fat and ugly and he's not gonna like me anymore, you know? And mind you, both my grandmothers had six and eight children. My mom had six, you know what I mean? Like my other aunt had 11, like, you know, they're still married. Like, I'm ignoring all that, you know what I mean? I'm listening to the people, the broken people, you know, the things everywhere. And then I worked. At this time, oh no, before that, when I was getting married, I had worked at an office that was a bunch of people that were either divorced or broken marriages or single, and just all this negative, you know, on it that also played into it. But yeah, so when my husband was like, I mean, I would like to have children. Do you think that's something we want to do? And I was just kind of like, I guess. And so we stopped trying to prevent it, and I was pregnant that month. And so I remember being like, oh my God, I just feel horrible, like I'm hungover or something. And we were gonna have friends over that night, because like every weekend we'd have people over. We owned like a big old house in the middle of the country. So it's like, oh, let's have another party. And he's like, I don't know. He's like, I think maybe you should take a test. And I was like, so then I took it, and I was crying. I came out of the bathroom and I was like, I guess we're not having a party tonight. And like my whole 9 months, I was kind of not unhappy or whatever. I was just really apprehensive. I was like scared, you know, I didn't know what was happening. And then at this point is when I was teaching, and it was such a stressful job. And I ended up like, I was 9 months pregnant. We ended up selling that big old house in the country. And it was on my due date that we closed. And it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. We left the house. We go to my mother-in-law's house, go to sleep. Next day, I wake up and I'm going down the steps. And I slipped and I landed on my butt. And I went down like 12 steps. And I mean, I was
Oh.
like 40 weeks pregnant. And I put on a lot of water weight when I'm pregnant. So I literally turn into like Violet Beauregard. So that was like 200 and something pounds coming Stairs. So my mother-in-law and my parents are there and they come run and they're like, "What was that?" And I said, "What happened?" And they're like, "You need to go to the hospital." And I was like, refusing. And they said, "So call your midwife," because I had a midwife because I was going to do all natural. And then I called her. She had me do kick counts and they were kind of low. And so she's like, "I need you to come in." And I was like, "Oh, now they're gonna." Anyone who's a midwife or has been pregnant knows if they get you in there and they think that there's a reason you shouldn't leave, they're gonna make you stay. And if you're not in labor, they're gonna induce you, that whole thing. So my mind's going in that place because I was following Ina May Gaskin, who did Spiritual Midwifery. Great book, by the way. But so I was all uptight about that. Well, in the meantime, my brothers called because my parents had left. My dad was going to the movies with my brothers. My two brothers called my dad on the phone. They're like, "You need to go to the hospital now. Just go." And I'm like, "Oh, what?" So I go to the hospital, and exactly what I thought was going to happen happened. And I'm sitting there cursing my brothers, like, "Never should have listened to anybody. Now I got to sign against medical advice to get out of here." And I was so upset. And my husband's like, "Listen," he's like, "You have a midwife. Like, she's not going to make you stay unless she thinks there's like a real problem here. Like, I think you need to, like, we just need to listen and whatever." So the next day, they tried to induce me. It didn't work, of course. I had zero dilation. I wasn't dropped at all. So they're like, "We're going to have to do a C-section." So
Oh.
I was very upset at that point. And I was just like, "Oh, so fine, whatever." And I didn't cry the whole time, but inside, I was just like, "Why is it everything, you know?" And again, it kind of goes back to my artwork, like all this intervention, right? I can't just do this natural, like whatever. So anyways, we go through it all, and then when he came out, he wasn't crying, and I noticed that they were kind of like, and I was kind of like, "Oh my God, this isn't good." Then they got him to cry, whatever. Anyways, it wasn't until like hours later that I finally get to see him, because they go through all this stuff and I'm sitting downstairs alone, puking my brains out because I do not react well to the spinal block or whatever. And I finally get to see my son, and oh, he's so cute. He had a little elf hat on. But when we finally see my midwife, she came up to me and she sat down and she was super serious, and she goes, "Oh, it makes me want to cry. All right, here's my femininity coming out." And she goes, "Do you believe in God?" And I said, "Well, yeah. Because I did, but not really." And she goes, "I've been doing this for like 35 years. My C-section rate is 6%." And she said, "I don't do them." And she said, "This was every bit of a miracle." She said, "If you didn't come in, he would be dead." Because he had like it, the cord was around his neck 3 times, which can be normal. He had a surgeon's knot, which can be normal too. So when he was really little, he had a huge umbilical cord. He did like a loop-de-loop and pulled like a knot through it. And then the thing was, though, I was full of like meconium. That's the poop. So he was just breathing it all in. And so if I had left, or if I had never gone to the hospital like I was planning, or my second plan to sign the against medical advice and leave, she said I would have delivered a dead baby. And so that to me was like hit me in the face, because everything that I blew off for so long and said wasn't important, and all the things, it's like it humbled me. And the main thing was that day, like earlier that day before I fell, I went up to my mother-in-law has like a Mary statue in the back, and I just said, like, "I don't know what I'm doing or why I'm even doing this, but as a mother, all I want is a healthy baby. That's all I want, a healthy baby." And a couple hours later is when I fell down the stairs. And so she said he had been like that for a while, and that if I hadn't have fallen, I never would have known that he was like in distress. So after that, I quit my job. I didn't go back to teaching. If I had taught one more year, I would have had all my student loans paid off, all kinds of things. And I just said, "No, I'm done," and moved on. And since then, I haven't regretted it. And I found that there's so much on the internet of, like I said, the pro-abortion and women need, their right to work and all this stuff. And I said, of all the things I've been through and like all the jobs I've had and careers, I mean, I was a secretary and then I was a teacher, I had the health insurance and all the stuff. And like, It's a joke. I said, the best career I have ever had is being a mother. And I said, it's the only career that I am not replaceable. And the greatest masterpieces that I've ever made are my children. And I wouldn't have known that. And I would still be making ugly, garish things because that's what the world was telling me. And all the beauty is like what came from my imperfect body. And that's all like I wanted to say. And it's so emotional because it's so sad what we've become. And like I said, just that story of the baby in the toilet, it's just like then people, the way they blow it off, you can't make them understand. And I would not understand unless they happened to me. You know, it was a situation. If that never happened, who knows? Maybe I'd still be angry and making penis paintings. Being like, why do I feel crazy? So, and another thing I want to touch on though, after
Okay,
school
well,
specials are
you made
so
me
good.
cry, so I have
Oh, sorry.
to.
See, our femininity is coming out. We're getting emotional here. But it's like the value of life. I don't know, like what's important, you know? It's not looking like this. It's like being who you are, crying, being ugly and red face, and just being like, it is what it is. It's doesn't matter. But the main thing with that after school special one, though, I made that in like 2006. And when my son was 7 years old, he went over to his friend's house, and his friend's 12-year-old cousin was staying there for a couple weeks and decided to show them porn on his phone. So my son saw it at 7. So that painting ended up playing out, what, like 15 years later? So how crazy is that? And so that one, or like I said, my wish of men being the plasticated ones, they all came to fruition. So it's a strange thing. And now trying to navigate my children in that world, you know. So now that he's seen that, and again, my kids don't have iPads. That stuff's not at my house. We don't, there's no access to it. But they go out in the world and it happens. You can't control it, you know. And I wasn't upset with my friend, and I wasn't even upset with the 12-year-old boy. I mean, he's doing what they do when his parent gave him a phone. You know, so it's like, so I'm now trying to navigate my son with things that, like, you know, naked people are beautiful and there is a naturalness to it. But it's not natural or okay to watch other people like it's a show, you know, like trying to create these boundaries and understanding without alienating them in a world that's just like anything goes. So, and he's so smart. That's the other thing, too. The fact that not only did I get to have a baby that was born alive, but that he's also healthy and he's beautiful and smart, you know, it just very much humbles me. He drives me crazy, but humbles me. So yeah, that's my story.
So, you and your husband have a bike shop.
Yes, we do. I excel in all the things that make you broke. You know. So yeah, we do things out of, like I said, a life of love, you know. We don't make much money, but we live in a real small town. So we do like events. I just had Saint Nick there on Saturday. You know, we do the bike ride and stuff. So yeah, we own a little shop. And that's why we were thinking of doing the coffee shop because, like, you know, winter, that's a dead season. So yeah, trying to figure things out.
I just Christine just told me that right before I hit record, and I said, "Oh, I've got to connect you to my friends Derek and Ula that are helping with the cutting, well, and really doing that, the cutting through books, because they have had a coffee shop in Seattle and now a smaller area." And I shared that with everybody about a month ago. So they know the ins and outs, the ups and downs. Once again, it's not a get rich quick scheme.
No, it's not. Well, and that's the
But
thing. The thing everybody keeps telling me, you're gonna have to sell a lot of cups of coffee. And I'm like, no shit. I think the main thing is we own our building, you know.
well, that is,
A huge building.
they're amazing. I mean, it just looks so appetizing what they do. And Ula makes all these little treats that are organic and, this. So, yeah, it's yummy little things. I'll read about something she's making and I'm like, oh, I want to eat that right now. This, amazing organic pastry that she's just made.
That's incredible. See, now I'm not as cool as Ula though, because I'm actually there's a local bakery the next town over that I think I'm gonna have do the baking for me. Just because I'm like, I don't know anything about baking, you know. I'm like, that's a whole nother, and same with the roasting too. I have a roaster that I'm gonna get from, because I was like, because on top of running the bike shop and the children, I'm like, I can't do two businesses and three. So I'm like, I need a little help. And then I think once I get comfortable or as it works more, then maybe I'll venture more that route. But yeah. So I would love to talk to them. That'd be amazing.
Okay. Well, your story about you hadn't told me that before, and that's really beautiful about going out to the statue of Mary and just saying that you needed help and then going down the stairs. I hadn't heard that before.
Well, and our joke kind of is that Matt's dad pushed me down the stairs because he had passed away, and every year we go for Christmas trees. This one year, he literally like football tackled me to the ground, but the ground is like covered in needles, so I was like landing on like a bed, like a sponge. And my joke to him all the time was like, "You're not going to tackle me now, are you?" You know, like totally joking. It was a funny thing. And so I said he must have known and pushed me down the stairs. That was our joke. But yeah, it was so that kind of brought me back into like finding God and those different things, and my view on the Catholic Church too, though, right now, like that's a whole nother story. All I'll say is what's running it now is, yeah, like not good. It's evil for sure, what's infiltrated there. But I think the truths that there are, you know, that you can find in a lot of religions, but I think that there are certain truths that have held on for thousands of years because it's truth, you know, family, being faithful to one another, and the sacrifice of yourself, you know, instead of what can you do for me, it's what am I doing for you. And my whole life has been that with my parents and my grandparents. All they did was sacrifice for their family, you know, and my parents raised six successful children, you know, no drug issues, nothing. And how does that happen in the modern world? You know, I can only hope I can do that with what I have. And it's just, and that's what I found. I mean, and the whole time that I was away from God or didn't have that in my life, I was so lost and so sad and just didn't see the point to anything. What's the point? You know what I mean? It's just crap, and tomorrow's gonna be crap too. But I did have one of my awesome professors. I had a few. But one, his name's Najjar, and he still teaches down there. And he had, in his later years, become Muslim. So that's what he had converted to. And I remember him once, like looking at my paintings, and he's like, "Okay," he said, "you're mentally healthy and you're physically healthy." And he goes, "How's your spirit?" And I just looked at him, and I was just like, and I said, "I don't have it. Like it's empty." And I remember him saying that to me and being like, whoa. And that was in college. So that was like, oh, was that like 2009? So it didn't really happen for another like 6 years, you know?
You
So
know,
like,
I really wish that hideous strength was in here at my desk and not in the other room in the bedroom, because I would read you the passage that I was just reading this morning. This is Jane's, God moment.
I
It,
love,
it's
go
yeah,
ahead.
it's well, it's amazing. But part of it was that she's got a conception of herself. And it, part of it has to do with academia. So what you're talking about, what your artwork is projecting, part of it is wanting to be taken seriously by a man. And
luck.
there's a point there. I can't paraphrase that. I've just read it once, and that was early this morning. And I don't know if you can tell by my eyes, but it's like, I don't really get up this early in the morning, but I did for Christine because she's a mother. And like, so I'm like, oh, can I keep my eyes going? Like, but what Jane was saying, this character is saying, is she didn't even know if God would understand her, if he would really get her.
Yeah, right.
And,
Yeah.
in other words, her projection, her perception of herself was actually a construct. And until we meet our spirit, as Alan would say, your true soulmate, then all you have is a construct. And it can be, as you said, see, what you're describing is coming from this wonderful, stable family, and you're with the same boy, man, now man, since you're 17, and you can see the lies, and you're trying to deal with that and understand what those lies are, but you haven't connected to your spirit yet. For you, it's this process of motherhood. And this then is like it's the knowing of exactly who you are. And this is what Jane was saying. When she finally met her spirit, it had nothing to do with who she thought she was. It had
Is it?
nothing to do with her construct of herself. Nothing.
Don't you think that that's the main downfall of dating sites? We put this idea of who we think we are, right? And like these like poses and like I'm into this. And you're gonna what? Number
Yeah.
one, it's and I saw it with my friend who went through a horrible divorce and all kinds of wouldn't wish it on anyone. But the way she would present herself, and I tried to tell her like you just look like meat for a wolf. Like if I was a bad man, I would look at you and be like easy target. Because the picture she would put on there. And I said, in the way she'd describe herself or whatever, it's like that's not even you. And so how can you find someone when you're describing yourself and it's not even who you are? And the main thing is I'm an artist. My husband studied physics. So if you want to talk about two completely different brains here, you know what I mean? We are so different in that way. But we kind of like the same music and things, and we're both weird and we like the outdoors. But it's really that we came from the same value set. You know what I mean? His family, how he was raised, and that's what it is. When they talk about being opposites, we're opposites, but our purpose in life and what we value is the same, and the way we want to raise our children is the same. And that's what I think is the big disconnect with people, is that we're all wearing costumes and wondering why nobody knows who we are.
Beautifully said.
Thanks.
Well, is there anything else that you what do you go? Oh, we haven't talked about your acting career.
I didn't start acting till I was 40, so just to
Okay.
let people know, yeah, so it's never too late. And it's just I've got these people in town. So we live in a town of 1,200 people. It's small. So if anything happens, it's because a couple people make things happen. And there's this couple in town that they build these incredible parks. They made a pirate ship one that's just, it's so cool. She's a former art teacher. So we connect on that. And there's this old mansion in town that does murder mystery dinners. And one time they're talking like, yeah, we need more actors, whatever. And I was like, well, I'll try it. So that's what I do. Make some cash. And that's how I bought Alan's series on the flash drives. I saved up. I did 11 shows and then I bought them.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, you told me that you'd saved up, but I didn't know it was from the murder mystery. That's lovely.
Yeah, I got $50 a show. So I saved up 11 shows and I had it. So yeah.
Do you love the flash drives?
Oh, they're amazing. And I'm not just saying that. Like as an artist, when I didn't know what to expect, you know. And then when I got them, the little booklets, how beautiful the picture, the wrapping, how all the like talks are laid out. It's amazing. I listen to them all the time. When I'm cleaning my room and stuff, I have that, you know, I just pop it in my computer and listen, and it's awesome. I think they're beautiful. And the first thing I watched were his videos. Because I like to see his face, you know what I mean? And see him talk. And it just makes me so sad. So I was like, oh my God, if I got to talk to him on the phone. Even though I think it would have been too much because he's so even keel and I'm blah, 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 blah. He'd probably get off the phone and be like, oh my God.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I can imagine there are very few people who could ever take the mic from Alan.
Oh, I just think he's so amazing. And it's just in everything I felt about everything, he touched on all of it, all of it. I mean, even the historical sense and how things don't piece together. I mean, it was like I had all these puzzle pieces And he was not only the missing pieces, he was the glue, you know? So I had it pretty much there, but I needed something that wasn't a book or some random person to be like, okay, this is how they all go, and we're gonna make them stick. And so I have nothing but thanks to give to him and to you, because it was you that I found, and therefore found. It was the your real histories that I finally traced down.
Well, I know that feeling about finding him. You know, for me, it was just this aha of I didn't even know how empty I was. I didn't understand that I had not found my soulmate,
The missing piece.
the missing piece. I just didn't know. It's like, oh, everything is perfect.
Yeah. Well, and I can't imagine what it would have been if he didn't find you. I mean, where would his work be now? You know, it's you're carrying it on, and it's just, I think it's amazing.
Well, I think that, yeah, I mean, thank you for saying that. But I know that I brought Alan some years because he was never in good health his whole life, and I think, you know, he burned the candle at both ends, and he didn't stop doing that because I arrived. But at least he had somebody who cooked and looked after, and you know, kind of kept a routine going, and I know that added years to his life.
Well, I'll even say my own husband, when he is in college, I go visit him. We're like 6 hours apart. So I'd go drive and see him, or he'd come see me. And I remember coming into his room once, and I'm like, is this an opium den? Like, it's just like trash. And like, what have you been living on? Like, you know, canned chili or like, oh, like I was just like, what is this? I don't. And you know, now he's a dad, but there's that balance, and life's a lot. And we kind of, it's not that you have your roles necessarily, but yeah, you kind of do. If you're good at one thing and they're good at the other, you're getting the job done together. Because like you said, burning at both ends, like he was, he's not going to be taking care of himself. You know what I mean? It's even like the showering or getting dressed. Sometimes I'm like, might want to change those shorts. I don't. Just saying, you know, you kind of keep each other on your toes. So no, I wholeheartedly believe that. And I think that's for anybody. You have someone in your life, yeah, your life is going to be more fulfilled. And especially when it's someone who wants to be that part with you. I think the problem is so many of us are so lonely. We try to rush and force things and get the wrong piece and make it try and fit in the round peg in the square hole and wonder why everything's wrong. You know, so
Now, one last thing about the flash drive project that brings us back to Derek and Ula. Because when I had the idea to do this, I talked to the manufacturer who's New York based, and he, you know, I said, oh, I want to do this. And he said, you know, first of all, I was just thinking about flash drives. But of course, he's a salesman. So he's like, oh, we've got these books. And I'm like, oh, wow, those are beautiful, you know. And so I'm thinking, oh, I can just see this and we'll have Alan and pictures of him and everything. And then I said, and then I want to have the flash drives in there. And he's going, blah, blah. And he said, they can be colored. And I said, can they be all different colors? Like each one of them is a color that coordinates with the outside of the package. And he said, we can do anything you want. And I said, oh, I love that. He goes, I mean, it'll add a little bit, not much to the price. And I'm like, okay, all right, this is good. So I'm laying it all out. I've got all of the pictures. I've got a concept for it. And I happened to be having a conversation with Derek and Ula and just telling him, I said, oh, they're going to be in these great books. And I want to do the flash drives color coded. And they said, well, would you like our help? And I said, oh, yeah, that would be great. And they bumped it up a notch.
Oh, totally. Well, and I think that's beautiful that you can trust people to do it. And that's the thing too. We have to realize we can't do everything. That's the importance of having like family and friends and people that are willing to help, because it is, I think it is like a group effort. I don't even know how you do what you do. And I think it's awesome that people that are expert in this want to help. And they're beautiful. Whatever they had helped you with. The thing that makes me happy is it sits on your bookshelf like little books.
Yeah, well, I mean, they helped first of all by, everything laying it out. I mean, all I had in mind was I wanted these images for these flash drives. Here they are. This, I want this one on one. They took the whole thing, the plaid backing on the green toned one that's the Sentinel. They took that and wrapped it around. They made sure it was laid out so the spine, all the font is matching and the font pops with the colors of the flash drive inside. So, when I saw what professional artists, what real artists can do with just this idea that yeah, that would be really cool. It's just amazing. And I am just forever, every day, grateful for all of the people who understand. I think it's understanding the value, the importance, the truth, the pearls of what Alan gave us.
Oh,
And
100%.
they're there. They go, yes, we see that too, and we can help. We can do that. And that to me is just, it's the best.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'd say I think this is a pretty cool group. Like I wish and I can't be on the talks all the time because my shop is open on Saturdays. I'll try and peek in sometimes and it never works. Like it's
Yeah.
always something takes me off. But it's like I wish we could all just be in a room together or meet somewhere sometime. 'Cause I'm like
Well, that, some of the people, Nick has met a couple of people that are in the group, and Graham and Gabriella have met a couple of people that are in the CTTM. They're in Germany, and Nick is in England, and Graham says, we've got to get everybody together. And it's like, well, who knows, who knows?
A trip to Scotland, everybody.
I think so. I actually think that that is a really good idea. Faith has told me that she's coming down from Canada next year. She said, I'm coming down and I want to take you on a road trip. And I was talking to her yesterday and I said, I don't, I, come down and we'll have a great time. But I just can't leave my cats.
Oh yeah, you're saying that. I know, right?
I can't, day trips are great, but I don't know. I mean, if we had a big, massive, let's all descend on Scotland and do some kind of remembering Alan, I think I might have to let the cats suffer with my brother.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, something. But otherwise, if you ever want to come out here, you got a place to stay.
You
So.
told me that. I love that. I think that's wonderful. So I appreciate it. I really
Oh,
do.
anytime.
Yeah. It's, I tell you, I personally, I've thought about this a lot. I kind of think that